Call the Agriculture House and Senate Conference Committee to order. This hybrid hearing is happening from G3 in the Capitol. Welcome to everyone online as well. I know we've got several things going on today, so appreciate everyone's efforts, and we'll try to work around everybody's schedules. Members, our plan is to continue the calendar from yesterday and walk through those items. My intention would be to try to adopt the same and possibly similar items at the end as we conclude, and generally probably looking at about an hour here. So, Chair Sundin, any brief comments before we get rolling here?
I think we got a little bit of drought relief yesterday. I hope you had a safe drive home after the event last night. But no, I'm ready to go.
Somebody told me 5 inches some places, so I don't know if that's fish stories or real. It seems real as hard as it was coming down last night. So yeah. Great. Thanks, Chair Sundin. And members, we'll just walk through the agenda. I'll just work with the Senate Counsel here to walk us through the first agenda item, which is meat processing. Ms. Grunewald, do you want to just tee it up for the committee?
Mr. Chair and members, I will start with the meat processing training grants, as Senator Westrum mentioned. And this one can be found on line 40 of the spreadsheet. And then on the side-by-side, it's on page R22 to R23. And the language here in the riders is pretty similar between the House and Senate side, the main difference being the amount funded. On the House side, $100,000 is funded in the second year for these grants, and on the Senate side, $30,000 is funded in the second year. And these are both one-time appropriations.
Fairly straightforward. Any comments by any members or Chair Sundin?
Thank you, Senator. This issue came to our committee here from a committee member, Representative Nelson N, as in Nathan, and I think this the safety issue is paramount. You know, as we gear up and get more of these people trained, and there's nothing, I guess, more unappetizing than a butcher with 9 fingers. You know. So I think it's money well spent to protect the industry.
Very good. Any other comments on it? I think it's fairly straightforward. We've got some a few different similar types of meat processing or meat cutting. Ms. Grunewald, the next item?
Mr. Chair and members, the next item is on line 41 of the spreadsheet. This is the meat processing education grants for secondary schools. And again, the language here is fairly similar between the House and Senate side, the main difference in the language being that the Senate side has some reporting requirements. And then the difference in funding, the House funds $500,000 in the second year, one time, and then the Senate funds this at $1 million one time in the second year.
Members, I can talk a little bit about this. It's an issue. Some of the farm groups, Farmers Union and others, but Farmers Union has been working a lot on this issue. One of the schools that is interested in these grants is one of the schools in my district, happens to be the same district my my children go to as students, and just an ag program like many that are trying to expand or have different course offerings, and so this would be a one-time grant towards a school ag department or a school that wants to get some meat cutting equipment in and start helping students look at this career option as a opportunity and either find out that it's a pathway they're interested in or not interested in. So Chair Sundin, any comments on this? It seems like we're pretty close on this. Could almost at least start with the House number and work up from there, but if we dare adopt that today. But any comments on the reporting requirements either and with this that the Senate has, I guess any thoughts on that? Just
It's inspiring me that you came up with a number on at least one provision out of the whole package. I just reminded as to why that might be, but I don't know. Chair Vang might have some thoughts on this as well.
Chair Vang, Representative Vang, any comments?
I think this is a good initiative. Our funding do take a more measured approach to try to try it out at a smaller number of schools to see if there's interest or sustainability. So I'll just leave it at that.
Very good. Any other comments on this? Seems like it could be some mutual ground on this effort. Ms. Grunwald, next item.
Mr. Chair and members, the next item would be on the second page of the spreadsheet, line 64. This is lab equipment for the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. On the House side, there's funding for $1 million in one time in fiscal year 23. And on the Senate side, there's $300,000 funding in fiscal year 23, also one time. And the language of the writers shows up on page R25 of the side-by-side, and the language is pretty identical except for some technical differences.
Okay. So, members, largely we're at a different number on this as well. Is there anybody from the agency or AURI that would want to briefly comment on this equipment and what the priority would be? Chair Sundin, I'll let you make any comment first, and then if anybody wants to raise your hand, feel free.
Well, as a board member, you know, with RE, you know, I've really become familiar with some of the struggles that they have, you know, trying to do their work. The lab equipment is important. And I've seen a couple of instances over the past year or so where hiring people is a challenge. You know, they want quality people so they can put out the best product possible. And, you know, I think cost of living adjustment is absolutely necessary, and it's overdue, actually, just to keep up with the rest of the folks in the industry. I think it would behoove us to grant that cost of living adjustment as along with the lab equipment investments. But I do concur that we should be hearing from ARI itself.
I don't think ARI is with us today that I know of. Is there anybody from AURI that might be joining? And members, we'll have to talk more on this. It's kind of a matter of what we have for resources as well as one-time expenditure and where would the equipment be best invested in. But similar language, different numbers, so 300,000 from the Senate, $1 million in the House. So we'll have to just work through that, but otherwise I think it's on the similar efforts. So no other comment. Ms. Grunwald, why don't we go to the next agenda item?
Mr. Chair and members, the next item we'll be discussing is the Healthy Soil Program on the House side, and on the Senate side, the Ag BMP grant program. These are both different appropriations, but with some aligning features. So I'll just touch on the appropriation differences. The Healthy Soil Program shows up on line 11 of the spreadsheet. The House funds this at $6.7 million, one-time funding. And on the Senate side, the Ag BMP grant program shows up on line 27. And this is funded at $50,000 one time on the Senate side. And Mr. Chair, if you'd like specifics more on the policy differences, I may lean on Mr. Sullivan and Ms. Painter.
And why don't we do that? Mr. Sullivan, if you would want to maybe start and talk more about the differences with the House language, and then Ms. Painter will touch on the Senate differences and then go to comments.
And Mr. Chair and members, this is Colby Sullivan, House Research Department. The language in question on the agriculture statutory changes side by side, starts on page R6 with House Section 12 and Senate Section 2. And to highlight a few of the elements from the House language, as proposed by the House for the Soil Health Financial Assistance Program, the Department of Agriculture could award financial assistance to not only farmers, as in the Senate language, but also local governments and private sector providers. The House language requires the department to consider certain considerations when implementing the program, support for soil health principles, supporting participants in the existing agriculture water quality certification program at the department, as well as reducing or avoiding greenhouse gas emissions. Let's see, the House language also, says that financial assistance may be awarded by the department for specialized equipment and technology that sustain soil health practices, whereas the Senate language is a bit more focused on specific eligible uses of money. But for those, for more on those eligible uses, Mr. Chair, I'll defer to Ms. Painter.
And Ms. Painter, why don't you touch on just the differences with the Senate language, and then just a little heads up, the Department of Ag, Commissioner Peterson, or if somebody would want to comment a little bit more on this from, I think the House provision is similar to maybe the governor's language, and if one of the ag groups wants to talk about some of the Senate provisions, we'll open it up for that briefly as well. Ms. Painter?
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. I'm Laura Painter. I'm an analyst with Senate Counsel. The Agriculture Best Management Practices Grant Program is intended to support healthy soil management practices. The program would involve creation of healthy soil management plan with stakeholders for the state. And there's a range of eligible projects on agricultural lands for landowners or lessees. And the Senate language states that no grant could be more than 10% of the appropriation to a single recipient, and also that 5% of the appropriation can be used for administrative costs.
So I think we've kind of got different approaches here a little bit, but Chair Sundin, and then why don't we hear from a couple stakeholders?
I'm going to defer to Chair Bang. She's been intimately involved in this issue along with a couple other committee members, so I would defer to Chair Bang.
Representative Bang?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This is one of our proposals that we really like. We like this because we think that it there's multiple returns on investment. We've gotten a lot of input from multiple stakeholders. And, you know, I think we do have a shared goal in promoting healthy soil. So definitely we'll be interested in having more conversations on how we can find a middle ground.
Thank you, Representative Vang. We've got Ag Commissioner Tom Peterson with us. Commissioner Peterson, if you want to just comment on this, I guess both provisions, Senate language and House, to the extent you have any comments, or Ms. Vobel, that's joined you at the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom Peterson, Minnesota Department of Ag Commissioner, and appreciate both bodies having this in there. This is one of the things that I think just about every farm group supports and has on their list of things that they want to see happen. And so we were really glad to see some form of this in both bodies. The couple of things that we have is just would be the name in the Senate. We do, some of our staff worry about, you know, we do have an Ag BMP loan program. And so we're just trying to decide if we should, you know, worried about confusing that with a grant program, or if we should, you know, go with the Soil Health and Financial Assistance Program. Not, you know, it's not a huge thing, but it's, you know, just a wording thing. And then just also making sure we have money to administer a grant program like this is always important to the program. We also have Brad Redlin, I think, is maybe on if we have like more technical questions too about the program. But we, you know, support it, willing to work with you on this as we go forward.
And Commissioner Peterson, maybe for at least for the Senate benefit, any more details on structure, the House language, would that be voluntary? Who would be involved, and how would that program operate, or at least from how would you envision that occurring?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Andrea Bobble, serve as Deputy Commissioner, Department of Ag. So I'm going to just take
welcome.
This question if I can. So it would be implemented similar to other grant programs we have at the agency. It would likely be run by our Ag Water Quality Certification Program, just with their expertise with soil health. It would be just a competitive grant program, similar again to what we do, a request for proposals. And we, you know, do our usual due diligence through the Office of Administrative or Grants Administration through admin to make sure we're operating correctly. But it would be very similar to programs we're used to implementing.
Thank you. Members, any questions? At the risk of not opening the floodgates here, corn growers are here with us. Do you have any comment or want to comment? I'm not compelling you to. I'm just asking, because I know you've had some, as some of the ag groups, you've had interest in this.
Hi, Mr. Chair. For the record, Alex Trunell with the Minnesota Corn Growers Association.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I want to thank both the House and the Senate for including soil health grant program, and I just wanted to comment briefly on the Senate language, and I would encourage the conference committee to adopt that language. It was worked on collaboratively with a large group of agriculture, statewide agriculture groups, and really feel like having a grant program established at the department would allow farmers to kind of de-risk some of the risks involved when you're trying new soil health practices, and also having a grant program at the department would allow the state and the department to leverage possible federal funds that it may be coming in the future through future farm bills or other possible dollars as well. So again, just want to thank the committee for including both the House and Senate for having the grant program, but would encourage the committee to take a look at the Senate language specifically.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Trunell. Any other questions or comments, members? So again, a little difference in dollars here on these. I know in the Senate there's also some dollars tracking in the Environmental Trust Fund bill that would complement the Senate language. But members, we have Mr. Dan Scogan from AURI that's been able to join us. So I'm going to just revert back to the AURI briefly. Mr. Scogan, maybe just some brief comments on the equipment and whether it's the funding level at either the Senate level or the House level, where would the priorities maybe be for AURI, or what seems to be the top need given some limited resources, if any? If you could comment on that for us as we finish that issue up.
Senator Westrom, thank you for the opportunity, and I apologize for not being there in person today. It didn't work out for me, and I appreciate Joel's work in getting the door open for me so I could join the committee here this afternoon. On Monday, when I testified in the House, when they had the gavel and talked about AURI's priorities in the legislature, the equipment need was one of the topics that I talked about. We had asked for a $1 million appropriation. Every year, AURI does budget money for its laboratory needs. Most times that does not include major equipment purchases. And in the last few years, AURI's projects have developed into some new technologies and new laboratory needs that we do not have the equipment for or have the resources to purchase. We are seeing a lot more interest in protein isolation. We are needing to do more with fermentation and pelleting and drying, especially in our Waseca co-products lab. And so we just thought that $1 million on top of what we typically budget for our equipment would help us do a little catch up. And I appreciate that both the House and Senate have put some money in the bills to try to meet those needs. There is a difference in the appropriation that's being suggested by both the House and Senate, but we really felt that the $1 million would get us to that catch-up stage, especially as we start to develop new needs. And we do want to have a relevant laboratory for those constituents of yours and the clients of ours that come to us and need things proven out.
Thank you, Mr. Scogin. Question, of the three different locations, is there one that would be the first place the lab equipment would be used, and where would that be if you had to put them on a priority list? Is there certain locations that's probably obviously first or most in need?
I think Mr. Chair, I think our first priority would be in Waseca. We continue to have two locations in Waseca as we outgrew our first lab there and have for the last 3 years been working out of two different locations. We're in the process of trying to bring that back under one roof, and that would be an opportunity then to put in some equipment. So I think some of the drying, some of the pelleting, some of the fermentation maybe would be in that Waseca lab, and would also anything that we could do to try to turn those industrial hemp fibers into knittable and sewable fibers. That equipment would go in there as well, along with where we now have our decorticator. And then the number two priority would be up in Crookston, where fermentation and protein isolation is probably going to occur as we move forward with that kind of work. So, Mr. Chair, I'd say Waseca followed by Crookston right now.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Scogin. Other questions, members? Go ahead,
Chairman. Yeah, I just wondered if you can remind us, if Mr. Scogin can remind us again, you know, our return on investment for the state when we put dollars into RE. Can you remind us of what kind of a return we get from your efforts and the people who work in the organization?
Two things on that, Chair Sundin.
Mr. Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Sundin, I appreciate the question. When we did our last annual report, we realized about an 80-to-1 return on investment. And we also, the other trend that we noticed, we were tasked a few years ago with trying to bring down our reliance on state appropriation. And even though our state appropriation has grown a little bit over the last 10 years, our reliance as total revenue has gone down from almost 86% of our revenue coming from the state is now in the mid-70s, probably 73-74%. So we have done that by engaging outside sources, writing grants, finding other ways to generate revenue, including a fee for service for the clients that we work with. So we've moved that reliance on the state appropriation down, and we've increased our return on investment to about 80-to-1.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Scogin.
Chair Sundin.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions, members? Having none, we'll move to the House-only provisions. Mr. Sullivan, I'll just pitch to you if you want to walk through them for us, and then we'll go to the Senate-only provisions.
Hey, Mr. Chair, the first House-only item to highlight is a $2 million one-time appropriation to the Department of Agriculture for information technology modernization. This was a request of the administration this year, and that can be found on line 30 of the spreadsheet, and on the agriculture appropriation side-by-side, that language is on page R20.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Chair Sundin, you want to comment on that first, and then I'll ask for any comments from the Department of Ag.
I think I'd just go straight to the department.
Okay.
Commissioner Peterson.
With that.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for having us again. So yes, thank you so much to the House for including the IT modernization request that we had in the governor's budget. We very much appreciate it. Just to give some background about why we're asking for this investment, we've talked to a lot of our customers and those who have been using our services, farmers and producers and Minnesotans, for a number of years now, and it's clear that we need to modernize our IT system. Many of the folks who use our services have multiple licenses, certifications. They might have several grants. They might use several of our trainings. But all of that is currently siloed within the department. So we want to be able to have sort of a customer portal that works together so that anybody who's trying to do something online, like apply, pay for something, renew a license, any financing that they might be using through the department could be all done online. Our system is outdated, and we need funds to start it, to build that foundation, to build that all out. It's really about making sure that government is more efficient, both for our internal processes, but also the external users who are using our government services. I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Very good. Thanks, Ms. Vobel. Any questions or comments? Ms. Vobel, my understanding is, I mean, 2 million, but it is probably a scalable number to some degree. Is that correct?
I would say the governor's budget request was for 2 million, and that's what the House has included. We would say that would help build the foundation for a lot more investment in the future. It certainly is scalable, but 2 million, I think, is what we're most comfortable with.
Very good. Any questions, members? Any other comments? Next, Mr. Sullivan, if you want to touch on the next item. Thank you, Ms. Vobel. Other questions might come up, so stay close by. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, the next item is also a request from the administration. It's additional funding to administer the Beginning Farmer State Income Tax Credit, money for the Rural Finance Authority. The spreadsheet line is number 35, and on R21, you can find the language. It's $141,000 in fiscal 23, with a base established of $56,000 in 24, and then the funding ends after 24, so $0 in fiscal year 25 and beyond.
Any comments, Chair Sundin,
from the House? Thank you, Chair Westrom. Again, I'd like to rely on the department to flush out their thoughts on this.
Okay, Commissioner Peterson.
Mr. Chair, again, Tom Peterson, Commissioner of Department of Agriculture, and I do appreciate the House putting this in. I think maybe you've heard from some of the different farm groups, banking associations, and others. The Rural Finance Authority is a gem for Minnesota. However, it's a good thing. We've seen a very large increase in our business. I don't have the figures with us, but our business, I can get it to you, but it's probably almost doubled in the last 5 years. Just on our loan portfolio alone, our number one loan is our Beginning Farmer loan. We just had a meeting yesterday, in fact, and so that's great to see. In 2017, we passed the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit and added that to the portfolio of the Rural Finance Authority, and that's 1,100 transactions a year on average, so about 500 or so sellers of assets and then 500 purchasers. That's a great thing. That's a really good thing. But what's happening is that there was no funding that came along with that, and so this would help us add a staff person. So we are seeing you know, our staff is just really taxed. We're trying to do what we can, but this would be really be helpful to us to be able to move quicker to get that as we see that program grow. And again, it's a good thing for Minnesota, but we could use some help. So thank you for your consideration.
So, Commissioner, would this money just go towards the beginning tax farmer tax credit work, or would it be cross-purposed with other aspects of the RFA, or how do you envision that?
Well, the way I read this, Mr. Chair and members, the way I read this language, it would. to be administered the beginning tax credit, so we would use it to dedicate for that. You know, we'd like to hire another person, whether we're able to dedicate a portion of that person's time. I don't know. It'd be about, you know, or how that would work, but it would, that money would go towards that. And that, like I said, 500 transactions a year on each side is a lot to manage and everything. So that's how I read it, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Any questions, members? Chair Sundin, any further comment?
Nothing other than I'd be very supportive of this, of course, and thank the department for their good work, and I think we should be supportive of that.
Very good. Mr. Sullivan, next item.
Mr. Chair and members, the next item is the House recommended changes to the Department of Agriculture's bioincentive program. In addition to on page 19 of the spreadsheet, proposing an additional $3 million in fiscal 23 and a base increase of $2 million per year, the House is also proposing policy language that can be found on the agriculture statutory changes side by side on pages R14 through R19. And in effect, these changes would shorten the eligibility window for eligible producers to receive payments under these programs. Producers would need to begin production by the end of this calendar year. Under current law, that deadline is June 30th of 2025. And then in state fiscal years 19, 20, and 21, the Department of Agriculture received more valid claims from producers than it had funding to fully pay. So the House language would authorize those producers to reapply and the Department of Agriculture to award deficiency payments equal to the difference between the amount provided by statute, so much per unit of energy, for example, and the amount that the department was actually able to award to the producers. Those producers could reapply until that deficiency is made up. And then there's one additional House section. It is on page R19, and that's the House language that was also brought to conference committee last year that senators may recall that would require producers participating in the bioincentive program to provide additional information to the Department of Agriculture, who would then submit that information to the legislative environment and agriculture committees.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Chair Sundin, why don't I go to you for any comments first?
Okay, thank you, Chair Westrom. You know, this is obviously by the what you just heard, this is a extremely popular program that you know, fosters some good research and production throughout the industry, ag industry, and I just would remind everyone that this is an incentive program. Nobody gets a penny until they produce, so that's a good selling point for investment anywhere. And then I think slowing it down, putting a little pause on the number of people that are going to be participating in it for a little bit, you know, this is a temporary pause, is going to enable the program to strengthen itself a little bit financially and then continue to do good work in the future. So this reaches so many assets, or so many different portions of the economy, and I'd like to invite anybody to talk to me offline on the importance of the food production that is going to be enhanced by this. So I'll leave it at that.
Very good. Members, other questions at all? This is, again, is a House-only provision. The Senate doesn't have language or dollars for this. With that, Mr. Sullivan, I think there's one more item briefly on your your list, and then we'll go into Senate-only provisions.
Mr. Chair, the final House item to highlight is the hunger relief funding in the House proposal. That can be found on spreadsheet on page 33 and on the agriculture appropriations side-by-side on page R21. The House is, I don't know if the funding is exactly the same as the amount requested by the administration, but the House is proposing additional funding in fiscal year 2023 of $3 million for grants to Second Harvest Heartland for hunger relief. And the House rider provides that of that $3 million, $500,000 is for the Good Acres Local Emergency Assistance Farmer Fund, or LEAF, program. And the House language establishes a base level of funding going forward for this purpose of $1.35 million in fiscal 24 and $1.3 million in fiscal 25, of which $250,000 each year is for the LEAF program.
Mr. Sullivan, thank you for that. Mr. Sullivan, does your language, my understanding is it might change some of the preference purchase in Minnesota. Is that correct, or could you clarify anything on your policy language?
Mr. Chair, the House language for this item is actually, it's very brief. It doesn't modify, for example, the existing rider in law that for funding the Second Harvest for discarded or otherwise surplus foods. It's a brand new rider, a brand new initiative, and it doesn't specify, the House language does not specify who the purchases or who the food would be procured from. It's merely grants to Second Harvest Heartland for hunger relief.
And Mr. Sullivan, I was just, with the dollars that's in the House provision, I was just asking our staff to remind me of the base, and I'm going to just ask Ms. Grunewald to remind the committee. Ms. Grunewald, can you update us or remind us on the base budget of what we have in for Second Harvest Heartland currently as a base budget?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. Last year's budget passed $1.7 million per year as an ongoing base for Second Harvest Heartland.
Okay. So members, again, this is a House provision not included in the Senate at this point. Chair Sundin, any comments on this or other questions?
Thank you, Chair Western. This came from the department. It was one of their initiatives that is brought to the committee. So if the department wants to comment further on that, I'd invite them to do so.
Senator Dietzick had a question. Senator Dietzick.
Hello, can you hear me? There we go. Thank you, Mr. President. And maybe the commissioner or somebody from the department could answer. I am a strong supporter of the Good Acre Program and Second Harvest Heartland. I know a little bit less about the LEAF program, but I do know that with throughout the pandemic and then now with the costs of food rising, I know more and more people are going to food shelves. So wondering if you have any information on the use of the food shelves going up. And then I think, Senator Westrom, you asked a question about are they buying Minnesota products, and I don't know if I'd be comfortable mandating that, but I think using the money to and spending it in Minnesota, I would strongly encourage that. So, thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Dietzick. Commissioner Peterson, any comment to Senator Dietzick's question or comments? If you want to go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members. Again, Tom Peterson, Commissioner. We're very similar to what the governor had in his budget. Again, this was something I think you see quite a bit of support letters, especially for the LEAF program. At least I saw them on the committee website here. And then Second Harvest Heartland, you know, there's something in talking about hunger and response from COVID. And, you know, we work closely with them. We've had the grant program for a long time. just to like beef up their programs. We thought this was a really important piece as we do have people still struggling as with COVID. And the LEAF program is, to me, is an exciting program that buys from emerging farmers that work through that Good Acre, which is just located on the edge of the university campus a few miles from here. It's a really good program. It's kind of a win for farmers and then gets the food to people here in the cities. And so I also have Ashley Bress on, is on the monitor, and I wonder if she could just offer some brief comments about Second Harvest and anything that might be helpful to the committee, if that'd be okay, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Press, Bress, identify yourself for the record, please.
Hi, good afternoon, Chair Westrom. My name is Ashley Bress. I supervise our grant programs in the Ag Marketing and Development Division. Second Harvest Heartland had approached us for a while ago, indicating that they anticipate seeing an increased need at the food shelves through at least 2022. So we see this as a possibility for helping them continue to meet some of the increased demand that they are seeing.
Thank you, Ms. Bress. Other questions, members? Comments? Having none, we'll move on to, I guess, the last item, members on the House. Mr. Sullivan, if you want to just touch on it briefly, we did talk about this the other day. I know Ms. Vang, Representative Vang, we had gotten some comment on this. So if you want to just touch on it, I don't know if we need to go into this real far with the down payment assistance, but go ahead, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, yeah, the final item that the conferees did discuss a bit at the prior meeting is the House's proposal for the Farm Down Payment Assistance Program. The statutory language with the eligibility criteria can be found on the statutory language side by side on page R6, House Section 11. And I believe I lost my spot on the spreadsheet here, but I believe the House appropriation is $2 million for this purpose in fiscal 23.
Very good. Thank you. Any comments by anybody on any member on this?
Chair Westrom, I hope Representative Vang would chime in on this a little bit.
Okay, go ahead, Representative Vang.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Like I mentioned before in the previous meeting, that this is, I think, is an important initiative that we should make an investment to encourage new and beginning farmers to address the aging of our farmers and to build a pipeline for young farmers to get into the farming industry. So we'll definitely appreciate the Senate support on this. And once again, thank you, Senator Dornick, for co-authoring or carrying it on the Senate side as well.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Senator Westrom. Thank you, Representative Vang. I do have a question. I support this, and sorry, I'm having technical difficulties, so I'm not on camera. I support this program because I agree with you that we need to help people that want to farm be able to. Was there any discussion on how this relates with the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit and with the assistance program? And then in taxes, in the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit, we require a report. It's not a long one, but just a report just to figure out who's getting the credits, where they're from. And then we added language into the tax bill, the Senate tax bill, to look at the racial background, ethnic background, and if they're socially disadvantaged to, again, just determine who is applying for the credits and getting the credits. And I'm wondering if this moves forward, if there was any discussion on putting in just a slight report. I don't want to overburden the department because I know they're busy, but just some very short data, just so we know, again, if this moves forward, who is getting those grants, where they live. Just, I think it's helpful evaluating the program to see, is it doing what we want it to do? Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dietzick. Representative Vang, I'll maybe go to you for any comment on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Dietzick, for your question. Yeah, I'm totally open to having some reporting language. Currently, there's not, and I think, considering this is probably the first of its kind in agriculture, that I think it would be wise to perhaps have some reporting language to see how successful or how effective the program is. And in terms of relation to the beginner farmers tax credit, the definition for eligible farmers is based off of the beginning farmers definition that's used in the tax credit. So that will be that relationship there, and happy to work with you on additional language as well.
Very good. Senator Dietzick, any follow-up?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other comment on that topic? Having none, why don't we move to the House or Senate-only provisions? There's four of them. Ms. Grunwald, I'll start with you with the money part of it, and then we'll go to the policy items as we move right through here. Ms. Grunwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll begin with discussing the Senate-only item for compensation to certain white-tailed deer farmers. This shows up on the spreadsheet on page 1, line 6. The Senate funds this at $1 million in one-time funding for fiscal year 23. And on the side-by-side, the rider language begins on page R2. The rider language clarifies that this money is to reimburse feed, veterinary, and other expenses incurred and offset revenue loss by owners of farmed white-tailed deer due to movement bans between December 19th and December 2019 and December 2021. These grants can be up to $5,000 on a first-come, first-served basis. And if there are leftover funds, the grants can be made additional payments on a pro rata basis. And the rider language also includes reporting requirements.
Thank you, Ms. Grunwald. Members, any discussion? I'll just kind of recap. The Senate, we held hours, several hours of hearings on this and heard just buckets of tears from family farms that have been devastated by an issue totally out of their control, a lot like farmers and drought relief, when something out of your control hits and you lose your revenue or your ability to have compensation for the work that you're doing or the livestock you're raising, our deer farmers have a real niche or specialty crop type farming situation that they've found niches to fill. And with no movement order that was put in place for about 2 years, then it was raised, lifted after about 90 days, but it really was during the prime season for most of the family farms that raised the deer. So that was a lot of testimony we heard in the Senate, a lot of losses that have gone on, and so this would be just a small portion of that, a lot like drought relief. So that's where the Senate dug into this issue, and a lot of concerns about it, but this would be a shot in the arm or a small reimbursement for those significant losses that we heard about. Chair Sundin, any comment on this? Otherwise, we can move on to another the next issue.
Thank you, Chair Westrom. Just a couple observations here. You know, if we've got to make certain any of those grants to help out those deer farmers don't go. Absolutely, none of that money goes to any of the bad actors. That industry has got some bad actors. They've been transporting some animals back and forth recklessly and endangering the wild white-tailed deer population. That's a great concern. It's a billion-dollar industry, the deer hunting in Minnesota. We hear that number often enough, and I believe it. It's a family tradition throughout the state, good form of recreation for people, and we'd hate to see the wild deer population contaminated by this disease. And the bad actors, I just can't see giving them a penny if they've been proven to be bad actors. Sympathy for the good people that are double fencing and done their due diligence, that's one thing. But we cannot be reckless with those grants. That said, I guess we should stop the bleeding before we just order more Band-Aids for this issue. So there cannot be any more permitting of these farms. You know, we can't make the problem worse before we figure out an ultimate solution to this. So those are my comments right now. The Deer Hunters Association would just and other hunting groups would just as soon eliminate deer farming completely. And if it can't be done safely and protect the wild deer herd, I would agree with them wholeheartedly.
Very good. Other comments? Any comment from any of the groups that this provision would impact? Deer farmers, you want to come up and make some brief comments to the committee?
Mr. Chair and committee members, Tim Spreck with the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association. I was prepared today to speak to the issue at hand. Some of the comments that Chair Sundin made have me a little concerned, and I'm not quite sure how to proceed. I do think it would be important for the committee to understand that this compensation is for people who were egregiously harmed at the heavy hand of government under auspicious circumstances in the most productive time of the year. This is their harvest time, the last time this no movement order was put in place. The people that I represent lost incredible amounts of money. There are people who are suffering egregiously because of mental health related issues that are associated with this. I think a majority of you heard the testimony. It was honest, it was heartfelt, and it was desperate. And these dollars would help these folks in a very small way to recoup a small percentage of what they've lost at the hand of government, as I said, under questionable circumstances, crushing them beneath their boot. Mr. Chair, I don't know if the deer hunters are prepared to speak to this issue today, but the notion that they want to drive the deer farmers out of business is incorrect. I believe comment from them may be warranted if they're willing, because I don't want to speak for them. I see the deer hunter or the deer farmers as a partner in finding a solution for CWD. They should not be painted with a broad brush. They should not be identified as an enemy. The work that they've done in developing genetic resistant deer with resistance to CWD is incredible. It should be applauded. And we have to get to a point where if we're going to have an honest and intellectual discussion about chronic wasting disease, we have to be open to having factual information at our fingertips that we can utilize to move forward. So, Mr. Chair, I apologize. I'm a little concerned. I'm maybe a little worked up here. But I have got roughly 150 to 200 family farms that are depending on me every day to be down here to save them from oblivion. And if you don't think they're on the edge of the cliff looking over right now, you are not paying attention. So, Mr. Chair, I'm available for additional questions if necessary. But right now I will end my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spreck, on behalf of the Deer Farmers. Mr. Bennett, welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the record and also any comments that have come up, but if you could also comment on the proposal, the funding amount and the Senate provision as well, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of my name is Corey Bennett. On behalf of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, I will be very, very brief. Mr. Spreck is correct. The Minnesota Deer Hunters Association does not support forcing deer farmers out of business. When it comes to the provision as far as compensation for transportation and what happened under the DNR proposal earlier this summer, the Deer Hunters Association does not have a position. If it's the will of the committee and is the will of the legislature to compensate these farmers for a lack of revenue that occurred under those circumstances, we think we'll leave that to the legislature to decide, but we do not have a position on whether they should be compensated or not. With that said, Mr. Chairman, I do think that without a doubt one can say that their damages did occur because of that. But if the legislature decides to compensate deer farmers, we will leave that to the will of the legislature. But we do not have a position.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Members, any questions for either Mr. Spreck or Mr. Bennett?
Chair Westrom?
Go ahead, Chair Sundin.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I'll apologize. I did not intend to speak for the Deer Hunters Association. I just know all the deer hunters that I do know could care less if their deer farming continued in the state. When I spoke about other entities that are concerned about this, I could refer to some of the counties that are taking action on their own. So we can have 87 counties doing this and keep all the lobbyists busy hopping from county board meeting to county board meeting, but I don't know if we're going to resolve anything here today or this year, but this is a sore spot for all the deer hunters in Minnesota.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. Other comments, members? And I guess just the one thing I would like to, we can talk a little bit more about Chair Sundin, but I guess I would take a little issue with your comment that seemed to paint the deer farmers as the cause of the CWD spread. We had a lot of testimony in the Senate, and you know, there's a lot of mystery about this virus that's been around for decades and decades and decades. There's been a lot of armchair quarterbacking with agencies and others that say they wouldn't have done something different, even though there's discoveries of CWD from time to time. It certainly is spreading in the wild. Wisconsin to our east is, you know, they've got a lot of CWD in their wild, and I don't think anybody's attributed that to initiating from the deer farmers. That's probably contributed to some of the spread or a lot of the spread that we've gotten in Minnesota, which seems to be more on the eastern side than the western, but there has been spots. So I just want to help clarify that. I don't know if your comments meant to be that broad of a brush, but I know the deer farmers take this very seriously, the ones I've talked with, the ones we've had in front of our committee, and the idea that they somehow have been the cause of CWD, I think is is a wrong-headed picture. That seems to be what some try to promote. But they are farmers eking out a living just like our beef cattle farmers and our pig farmers and our specialty crop farmers and so many others that we try to have a broad environment for agriculture in this state. And so that's where the Senate has tried to look at this as objectively as we can, treating all farmers the same as they try to innovate and figure out markets to make their small farm generate enough money for their families to live off of. And we don't want to leave people with the impression that somehow they're the ones that have brought CWD upon us. There's been a lot more found in the wild, I believe, than in private farms in the last 20 years in our state. And the numbers are relatively low compared to Wisconsin, thankfully. But any response to that, Chair Sundin, I'll give you an option for that, but not needed either. So,
thank you, Chair Westrom. I would just say I think I referred in my opening comments on this issue about the bad actors. If we just simply change the dynamic of bringing in more and more of the deer farms, I think we'll just increase the risk of this disease spreading. And there too, we may have more bad actors. So the good actors that are doing fine, you know, I don't mind a bio program if we ultimately eliminate deer farming in the state. But like I said earlier, I don't think we're going to solve this today.
Very good. Any other comments, members, questions? Otherwise, good discussion. We'll move along. Thank you to the testifiers. And
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Painter, I think the next item goes to you with ACRA, if you want to review that for the committee. And
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Try to keep moving along here, members.
And the statutory changes side by side, this can be found on pages R9 and R10. It's Senate Section 8. It raises the reimbursement payments from the Agricultural Chemical Response and Reimbursement Account. The cap would go from $350,000 to $575,000 in $75,000 increments every 2 years, starting in 2023.
Thank you. Any questions on that? And then maybe I'll just ask the department for a brief comment. But Chair Sundin, I guess maybe I'll just, this has been a provision we had in the bill last year, the omnibus bill that we both passed, tasking a report and a study, some study that work group, I should say, that went into reviewing this and to try to keep up with the higher costs that these entities are facing, as well as kind of balance, keeping a lid on some of the reimbursement and, of course, the associated fee that keeps replenishing the account. We came up with the incremental increase to deal with this issue for at least probably the next decade or better. This hasn't been raised for nearly 20 years, and so that's where the Senate has tried to work out this provision. I know a lot of the co-op networks and ag elevators and co-op, ag co-ops are widely in support of this provision. And so, Chair Sundin, any comment on that or thoughts from the House? And then I'll maybe ask for brief comments from the Commissioner.
I'd look forward to hearing from the Commissioner on this. That'd be great. We heard the bill in the House. I'd like to hear from the Commissioner on this as well.
Okay. Commissioner Peterson, welcome back. Identify yourself and on this topic, if you could comment.
Mr. Chairman and members, Tom Peterson, Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Yeah, a couple of quick comments on this. You know, you said it well. This issue has been around for quite a while. The analysis of the data definitely shows the costs have been increasing. But we do have a couple of comments if we're going to work on this year, and we're totally open to this. But our staff, and I do have Roger McAdams on, and maybe he could offer some comments after I just do a couple of brief comments. that it, to us, it would make more sense to just raise it without doing the incremental steps, because the incremental steps are going to cause a lot of fee increases, because remember, the fees go up, you're going to drain the account faster by raising the cap. So we're going to have to raise fees on to fill the account back up. And so by doing that, you know, you're doing this. And so then the other part is the minimum or the threshold, so that if the account gets to a certain level, we have to raise the fees then, that we would propose also triggering those triggering fees to, or those triggering caps as well, if we're going to raise the cap. And so again, open to like working on this, but I think that, you know, those would be our suggestions. I think even for the industry, I think it would be more helpful to just raise it to like the higher level that we've talked about, and then also doing addressing the caps on either end. And so if I could just have Mr. McAdams offer a few extra points on that, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Commissioner Peterson, Mr. McAdams, so first members, we had anticipated going till about 2:15. We'll probably go just a little over that, but just for everybody's planning, it won't be much beyond that, I don't think. I think we'll roll through these last few items pretty quick. Mr. McAdams, welcome. Identify yourself for the conference committee, please.
Mr. Chair and the committee members, just to let you know, my name is Roger McAdams. I'm the Assistant Director in the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division. I am also the Executive Director of the Agricultural Chemical Response and Reimbursement Account Board. As the Commissioner said, we did provide a report to the legislature. We did do an analysis. It's obvious that the costs have been increasing for many, many different reasons throughout the change of the program over time. The cap has not been increased since 2000, when it was raised to $350,000. Most of the comments in that report, which you all should have received at one point, have indicated they support the raising of the cap to the amount of inflation, which is at that $575,000. We are a little bit concerned of trying to do it in increments. In increments, it would cause some quite a bit of administrative burden on the department and confusion with applicants. We are also concerned that it may actually slow down cleanups. If I was to know my cap was going to be raised in 2 years, I might just say I'm not going to do anything for 2 years, and then I'll do the cleanup. So if the cap is going to be raised, we would suggest it get moved up all at one time. I do think no matter if it's moved in increments or if it is done all at one time, the fees will have to go up. There will be a considerable amount of expenditures that will hit the account that aren't accounted for right now in the fees. So it will have to go up either way. And the other thing that Commissioner Peterson was referring to, currently right now the statutory fund balance has to stay between $1 million and $5 million. If we raise the cap to just under $600,000, that's one site can get half of what the minimum balance could be. It makes it very difficult for us to manage an account, especially if it goes up, the cap goes up to $600,000 in that $1 to $5 million range. So one thing that would help considerably for not only the department, but for those eligible parties coming in for reimbursement, if the cap does go up, if that statutory minimum or maximum fund balance could change from maybe $2 to $8 million versus the 1 to 5. It would help allow the commissioner not to have to raise and lower the fees quite as often as they do right now. But keep in mind, this program has been out there since the early or late 1980s. It has distributed over $50 million for cleanups across the state, and it's done some good work, but the costs are definitely going up. So.
Thank you, Mr. McAdams. Mr. Patrick Murray from the co-ops or AgriGrowth would want to comment on this as well. Mr. Murray, can you identify yourself?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you, and committee members as well. Patrick Murray with Minnesota Crop Production Retailers, and Senator, I was with AgriGrowth and Co-op Network previously, but now I'm with the Crop Production Retailers.
Can't keep up with you, Mr. Murray.
We do represent some of the same members, but Most importantly, we represent a lot of the retailers that do participate in this program. And as you had mentioned, Senator, yes, the reimbursement amounts have not been raised in quite some time. And I think the amendment language that you have in the bill here, once you get to that actual number, it does reflect what the study that was done by the department, what the cost for inflation would be, which was $575,000. I believe your number is $567,230. So we absolutely do support it. We do understand the department's concerns about the stepped up incremental raising of the reimbursement amount, but we certainly want to be helpful and work with you and work with the House. We know Representative Backer, they did have a hearing on his bill earlier this session. The report was heard over there in the House as well, and there certainly is a need out there from our members. And we also do know that the commissioner would have to raise these fees, but our members recognize that. But we also know that if more sites are cleaned up over the long term, maybe there would be less participants that would actually have to go into that fund to make these repairs. So we do appreciate, again, you having the language in the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions, Senator.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Murray. Members, questions for any of the testifiers? I think we got it covered. Chair Sundin, any further comment, or else we can move on?
Let's move on. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Ms. Painter, a couple
Mr.
more
Chair.
Items, and go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, the next Senate-only provision is found on page R14 and relates to agricultural preservation land. This would allow solar energy generating systems producing 1 megawatt or less of energy to be installed on agricultural preserve land.
So I'll try to recap that real briefly for House members, the Senate. This provision basically would allow solar structures to be placed on ag preservation lands. Senator Jasinski brought this to us. Not every county has this designation, but where it is, this would allow these structures. Ms. Painter, am I missing anything of importance, or is that primarily
it's...
what we're just allowing as a, there's a list of current allowances already, if I remember right, correct, Ms. Painter, and this would just add those solar systems into that same allowance.
That's correct, Senator Chair Westrum.
Any questions from the House or senators? Having none, why don't we move on to, I think there's one more item, Ms. Painter, dealing with the regulated animals issue.
That's correct. And Mr. Chair and members, this can be found on page R23 at Senate Section 16 relating to zoos. It adds an exemption to the regulated animal section for a USDA licensed exhibitor of regulated animals. So this would be large cats, bears, and non-human primates. And it would allow an exemption for those exhibitors that house animals owned by institutions accredited by the American Zoo and Aquarium Association.
So again, members, I can talk to this a little bit more. There's a private zoo in the center of Minnesota, also in my district in Freeport, just outside of Freeport, in the Stearns County, St. Cloud area. A very nice zoo. They have a great reputation, but as the statute, as they were reporting to their local sheriff's office, which is what the statute requires, it became apparent that to add more monkeys or to house monkeys they were currently had was technically not. They were not able to add any more of that or some other animals because of the current statute. It does allow it for AZA accredited zoos, but not ZAA zoos. Initially, that was language the Senate looked at in working with some concerns or trying to compromise. We came up with this language that's much more narrowly tailored upon further review and discussing this issue. They there's a lot of trading working back and forth between many of these zoos, many of them public zoos that I will refrain from saying them, but you would all very well recognize big zoos across this country. Some of you have probably even visited them. But there's a real working together between zoos and housing animals for diversity of breeding, as well as changing up exhibits from one place to another. So different exhibits, the change is what brings people in and vice versa. And so they house several animals in the private zoo that is in my district that we're working with to try to figure out a reasonable solution. And so that's where this modified language came, is the AZA, for example, if they're going to house an animal at another zoo, which they do here in Minnesota, they come and do their own due diligence before they would bring their animals. They are credited by the AZA, and so there is a lot of checks and balances and oversight. And so this language is narrowly tailored, but would accommodate the ability to have additional primates or some other zoo animals that they are seeking to achieve with this fix. So that's kind of the background behind this this language. I'd be happy to open it up for any questions or comments if members have that. Chair Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Help me understand why this would be, help me understand how this would be in an ag bill.
Chair Houseman, the statutes that handle regulated animals come under the Department of Agriculture statutes. Ms. Painter, maybe you can add to that, but that is under our ag committee jurisdiction.
That's correct. Thank you.
Any other questions, members?
Chair Westrom.
Yeah. Rep. Chair Sundin.
I'd just say, yeah, thank you. We did hear a similar bill brought up by one of our committee members, and I'm going to take this language. I'm going to discuss it with that committee member and get some input on this before I comment on it. But thanks for bringing this up.
Very good. Thank you. I'd appreciate that. And it's Representative Anderson, I think, had the carry to the bill in the House, but this is more narrowed than the original bill that I think you guys had a hearing on, which we initially had started with. But very good. Feel free to ask any more questions on it. Any other questions on this topic? Having none, Ms. Painter, is there any other Senate-only provisions? I think that concludes that list of items.
Chair Westrom, that's correct. That was the final one.
So the only other item, Chair Sundin, I thought as we just wrap up, it would make sense to maybe move the same language that there's a couple of provisions on, and I just asked staff to highlight them. Would get us just a start on composing our final conference committee. I think generally, I think we've got agreement on the same language, and if that's okay, I'd make that motion, but I'd let staff first identify that. Ms. Painter, if you would want to just walk through the same language, or Mr. Sullivan, if you guys have a preference.
Mr. Chair and members, the same or similar language would be the Agricultural Best Management Practices Loan Program modifications, and this can be found in the statutory side-by-side on page R2 to R5. The similar language as the loan program on R4, and then also the same language is for the oriented strand board production incentive eligibility and that can be found on pages R19 and R20 of the side-by-side.
Any questions, members?
Chair Westrom, I did have Chair a Sandeep. Short. Thank you. I did have a short communication with Chair Vang regarding some verbiage. Maybe she wants to share some comments.
Go ahead, Representative Vang.
Sorry about that. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to double check the same. I guess my question will be, it's not about the cooperative development grant, correct? What we're discussing right now?
No, Chair Vang, or Representative Vang, that wouldn't be what we're proposing at this. And I'm thinking that would probably be a discussion for next week. Just the two similar or same items. And Ms. Painter, even for the purposes of just starting the adoption, I know there's just a slight tweak on the one of those provisions. Which one was that? The R19 through R20. There's a one word technical difference. So. We could either include
Chair
that
Westrom.
In the sames, or we could exclude that at this point and just focus on the two same provisions.
The technical difference is found on page R4, would be lines 33.1 in the House language and 33.16 in the Senate language. In the Senate version, we've crossed out the word multiple. So it says, no borrower shall at any time have, and multiple is crossed out, loans from this program, whereas the multiple remains in the House version. That's the difference.
So for the purpose of moving along, Chair Sundin, I would say let's set that issue just aside to make sure everybody's comfortable with it. And Ms. Painter, if you could just make the motion for the two sames, that's what I would propose moving at this point in time. What lines are they?
So, Chair Westrom, you would have moved to adopt. Apologies. Let me just make sure I have this right.
Okay. Ms. Painter, I'm going to, our committee administrator, Joel Hansen, I think has got it. I'll just let him comment and then I'll make
Thank
sure
you.
We're on the same page.
Senator Westrom.
Go ahead, Chair. Sorry.
I'm getting some flash communications here that I think we're okay and the department's okay with the Senate on the similar language. So if you wanted to note that and include this in the language, we can get that one off the table right now, too.
Okay. Chair Sundin, did you say they're okay with the Senate language?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So then I'll let committee administrator Joel Hansen here comment, and then Ms. Painter will make the motion. Go ahead, Joel.
Members, so that would be then the adoption of the language in R2 through R5. The adoption of the Senate language that you would find then on R4, and then the adoption of the language, the same language on R19 through R20.
Okay. So, members, I would make that motion. Ms. Painter, does that coincide with your understanding, and also Mr. Sullivan, if you would comment as well, just from the House, so you understand what the motion is. And then
yes, Mr. Chair, this is Colby with House Research. Yeah, my understanding is the motion is to adopt Senate sections 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 12. So that's the Ag BMP loan program modifications and the OSB production incentive eligibility modification.
Okay, that's correct. Mr. Sullivan, Ms. Painter, any comments?
Chair Westrom, that's correct.
Okay. Chair Sundin, is that agreeable to the House if we adopt those provisions as we conclude today's hearing?
Yes, thanks for the clarity from staff. That's great.
Very good. And members, not to prolong it, Chair Sundin, and the feedback, what we did in the Senate is just took out the word multiple because we felt it left a little ambiguity. The whole intent we felt was whether they have one or more loans, the intent wasn't to go over 200,000, but we thought there was a way that somebody could find a little discretion or discrepancy in the language if we leave the word multiple in. So that's why we had just removed it. But the departments weighed in on our committee and also weighed in here today. So any further questions on that motion? Otherwise, I'll proceed to a vote. No further questions. All those in favor of adopting those provisions, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, I think we'll get to us. That'll bring us to a stopping point here for today. I think we've gotten through everything that we intended to, and that we've got more insight and background on. My intent, Chair Sundin, and we can talk further. But I know we got to get to the broadband provisions. So I would. My intent would be hopefully early next week, Monday or Tuesday, we could get to those topics, review them similar to what we've gone through with the ag provisions. And before we adjourn, any update from the housing chairs? Because I know they're working also separately as we work through the different provisions. Senator Dreheim, any comment from you? And then I think Senator Dreheim's on the floor actually right now, so he's not able to. Chair Hausman, any brief comments, and we'll just let you two chairs keep working.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we have been talking, and we have been also having conversation with the Commissioner Ho, and so there's early conversation. I think the what continues to be a stumbling block is Senator Dreheim has been anxious to hear from his leadership what the issue of setting targets is and what discretion he has beyond that before he gets a firm word from his leader about a target that he has to work with.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Hausman. And Chair Sundin, any final comments? Otherwise, we'll move to adjourn. Chair Sundin.
Thanks, Senator Westrom. I guess ditto on the financial end of things. I'm looking for some guidance from leadership on how much money we will be dealing with ultimately, and it's going to drive how we move forward as a committee. We'll be talking offline as far as scheduling the next committee meeting, and thank you for your time today. We'll be talking offline.
Very good. Thank you, Chair Sundin. And again, we'll talk about trying to maybe look at the focus on the broadband sections and walk through them early next week. It would be my intent probably that we would not meet back until Monday or Tuesday, depending upon if the House calls it or we call it. But that would be what I think the landscape looks like. You think anything different, Chair Sundin?
I'll be speaking with you before we post any further meetings.
Very good. Thanks so much, members, and to the others that have been able to join us. This conference committee meeting is adjourned.